Good afternoon and welcome to our virtual meeting. It's 1:30 p.m. on January 5th, 2021, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. In accordance with the Governor's Proclamation 20-28.14, we are holding meetings remotely. Online today we have Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, Commissioner Tony Olson, John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, Ann Spangler, our General Counsel, Melissa Collins, our Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Assistant Clerk of the Board, and Lila Wall, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute and turn off the camera on your devices when not speaking. I will ask for questions or comments on agenda items as each item is discussed. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. Some questions can be answered during the meeting, while others may require more time. Please indicate you would like to speak by clicking Raise Hand in the software, or if joining by phone today, dial *9 and attendees will be called upon to speak at the appropriate time. Commissioners, are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the published agenda?
I have none.
Okay. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, state and spell your name and indicate where you are from. Comments from the public is item 2 on today's agenda, and that is when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on today's agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. So first up today, we have item 1, recognition and declarations. And item 1A is team of the month for January. We have our information technology service ITS help desk team. So I'll introduce Melissa Witzel.
Thank you, commissioners. The rest of my team, you guys are welcome to turn your cameras on as well. So I'll go and get started. My name is Melissa Witzel, and I have the pleasure of managing the ITS end user group and help desk. You may not know this about my team, but we are split into a few different focus areas. We have a lot of crossover, but basically we have members who manage the operating systems, several desktop software pieces, iPhones and iPads. We also do asset tracking, hardware. We do all the procurement for all the computer and assets that you guys use every day. We also do onboarding and permission management, including the permissions for the bulk electric system compliance. We also do training. We provide walk-up support and phone support. I have been very fortunate to have such an amazing team to work with. They do an outstanding job bringing their positive can-do attitudes to work every single day. While my team has changed a bit in the last year, I do want to talk specifically about the team's contributions of the transition to working from home with the onset of COVID. I want to recognize all the members of my team who are part of the transition to work from home. Everyone on the team took part in almost every aspect of the transition. However, they all provided leadership in the various moving parts. So Nicholas Knight, Ryan Huffman, and Matt Stirk all provided the support to come up with the plan to deliver the equipment in the most efficient manner. They also lead the planning for a process of getting employees the access to the systems they needed while working remotely from either a district-owned device or their own. Kim Witt and Jonathan Lee searched for and procured the equipment we needed to help people have a comfortable and productive home working environment. This was especially challenging since nearly every company across the country was trying to procure the same items. This included hundreds of desktops, laptops, monitors, docking stations, cell phones, iPads, headsets, and hotspots. Daniel Sonicson, Casey Jones, and Joel Carnes worked the front lines to answer calls. They managed much of the equipment delivery and training for the employees for walk-up support and for how they work from home. They also established and maintained records for all of the equipment used to work from home. While maintaining social distancing and safety guidelines, they adapted their customer interactions by providing curbside pickup and drop-off. They worked out in other offices, and they even did a few home deliveries. And I'm not sure how many of you have had to wear a mask for more than 2 hours at the grocery store, but working in the office, it can be quite cumbersome to wear a mask and be able to talk and have conversations with employees. I am so proud of our team for pulling this off and mostly with their sanity in check. Most of the team are still interfacing with their employees on a daily basis and putting their own health as well as the health and safety of their own families at a higher risk compared to the rest of us who are safely working from home. In closing, I do want to give a shout out to the other people and departments who worked with us and helped make the transition go as smoothly as it did. Facilities and the security team for their, they provided the shack for us to store equipment so that people could just come and do a drive-by at the gate for the equipment. Customer service managers, especially, they worked really hard with our team in procuring all the equipment for all the CSRs, and they mostly exclusively worked with their own employees to get them set up and working from home. It was a huge effort that they put in that really helped us out a lot and get them working from home. Matt Zakowski and Devon Yeager, they worked side by side with our team in those early weeks when we were handing out the massive equipment. They were able to help us train the employees, set up iPhones and iPads. And last but not least, we are extremely grateful to our own employees at the PUD. Their patience, constant support, and positive attitudes really did contribute greatly to the success of a smooth transition to working from home and continues to ensure our team remains positive. So on behalf of my team, I would like to thank you all very much for your notes, your emails, your cards that you have come in from all the departments. We are so very grateful to you for recognizing the extraordinary work the team has done all year and will continue to do into next year.
Commissioner, do you have any questions or comments for John?
Yeah, I would, I'll add in with a little color commentary. And I think Melissa was a little bit understated the, not just the performance, but how this team has stepped up. First of all, this team is really a group of unsung heroes in a normal year, under normal conditions. And I know I'm one of the higher maintenance or more frequent flyer customers of theirs, but they do an outstanding job day to day. And when the pandemic hit and we took up, you know, moving every 70% of the workforce to working from home, this team just, you cannot put in words the amazing job that they did. And it's funny because at that time, really almost on a daily basis, but at least weekly, I was on calls with my peers around the country at other public power companies or utilities, and all doing this, trying to do the same thing. And I'm hearing the struggles with all of these utilities about trying to get their folks to home, working from home. And I'm sitting back thinking, man, am I thankful that we've got the team that we have. It took them literally weeks and in some cases months to get to the point that we were within a week or two. So again, can't say enough about how fantastic this team is on a normal basis, but then what they've done to step up above and beyond throughout this year is just extraordinary. This team is well, well deserving of this award.
I'd like to add to that I too, John, tuned in to many meetings, webinars, seminars, all of that, they talk all the time about, you know, the troubles that they're having, the challenges they're having. And I personally have really appreciated having Melissa or Nick or one of the other employees come to our rescue at times. And I am deeply grateful to them all. And I haven't sent any notes. I wasn't sure exactly how to do that, but this is my note of thanks. Thank you, Melissa and team. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm very proud of this group.
I'll just say it's a huge lift. I mean, everyone has a regular job, and then to bring something like this on in a short period of time is phenomenal. And you know, from my end, it was just seamless. I needed a laptop. I got a laptop. My internet was bad. I got a hotspot. That hotspot didn't work well. I got a different carrier hotspot. I mean, really impressed with how everyone came together. This really is phenomenal. And I think it also speaks to having a robust system to start with so that we had the things in place. So anyway, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Logan, John, could I just make a quick comment?
Sure.
Lee Galvez, Chief Information Officer. I'd just like to share my appreciation for the help desk team. You've always been a great team, although your star shined even greater over the last year. Your professionalism, knowledge, expertise in supporting employees across the district has been exceptional. This recognition is so well deserved, and you've done a great job. Thank you so much. You're much appreciated by the employees and leadership team across the organization. Thank you.
As Commissioner Olson, I mirror everything that has been said. I do want to especially say kudos to Melissa for the obviously very strong leadership that you provided this team. And also in terms of support of the board office, the board staff in helping us transition, which I don't know about my fellow commissioners, but it was very difficult for me. and your patience thank you. Thank you for the patience.
Melissa, what did you mean about onboarding? I think you said it was just part of a longer sentence. You said something about commission onboarding. What was that?
So part of the thing that my team does is whenever a new employer contractor starts, they have to go through a process of gaining account information and credentials and permissions and software and equipment. So my team takes care of all of that as well.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. A big round of applause.
Thank you all.
I'd whistle, but I can't whistle.
Very, very well deserved.
Very well. It's wonderful to see team awards too. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So next is item 1B, our General Manager's Life-Saving Award for Andrew McDonald. So we have Jason Zdechowski here who will introduce Andrew, and then I think our CEO would like to have a few words.
Good afternoon, commissioners, and happy new year.
Where's Andrew? I don't see him.
He's right next to you on my screen.
He's right below.
Hi, Andrew. Okay. All right. Got it. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Andrew. And I'm here to introduce Andrew McDonald from our generation department. Andrew is a biologist in the generation group and was performing work on the Sultan River when a coworker required life-saving help. Andrew responded in heroic fashion. And it is my pleasure to introduce him, and I'll now hand it over to John for the life-saving award.
Thank you, Jason. So every fall, the district fish biologists complete salmon surveys as a routine part of our FERC license implementation for the Jackson Hydroelectric Project. And on this particular day, staff were out completing a 3-mile float to monitor adult Chinook returning to spawn in the lower Sultan River. Anyone who has spent time on a river knows that there are inherent dangers to this activity. Staff must be aware of potential hazards in the river, including downed trees, overhanging tree limbs, rocks, rapids, etc. At times, staff may portage around potential hazards and walk the raft along the shoreline. While Andrew McDonald and his colleague were walking their boat around a hazardous area, Andrew heard his colleague cry out in pain. Andrew, who was pushing the raft at this time, turned around to see his colleague laying in the river. Andrew knew that he couldn't manage the raft and help his colleague at the same time, so he called back to let his colleague know that he would be beaching the raft and then coming to help with the situation. Andrew quickly implemented an overarching theme that he had learned from every safety training he had ever taken: keep a calm head. Andrew McDonald remained calm while assessing the situation and formulating a plan to take care of his coworker. Andrew worked with his colleague to make safe and deliberate moves towards the raft, which is the only option for transport in this remote setting. While making their way down the river, Andrew and his coworker decided that the best course of action upon landing would be to call 911 for assistance. Andrew's calm, methodical, and practical approach to getting his injured coworker and himself to safety are a testament to his training, his professionalism, and his leadership. Andrew, I am proud and honored to present you with the General Manager's Life-Saving Award. Congratulations, Andrew.
Thank you.
Wow, thank you, John. Thank you, commissioners, fellow employees. I don't think any of us, can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, perfect. You know, in this line of work, you hope that nothing like this ever happens, but in case it does, you better be prepared. And I was just, you know, on this particular day, something went wrong, and luckily for me, my coworker also kept a calm head, which helped me kind of navigate through the situation. And we really worked together to get out of that position and into safety. So, in my career as a biologist, I've taken numerous swift water rescue courses, wilderness first aid, along with the district safety trainings. And the common theme in all those trainings in my career has just been to keep calm in those tense situations and be able to really harness in on situational awareness and just take it one step at a time. And for me, I got a lot of things rolling in my head all at the same time. And so I'm kind of go, go, go. But I had to force myself just to slow down because my coworker was very badly injured. And I was the only person that was going to get him out of that situation. So I knew I couldn't injure myself in the process. And so that really helped me kind of be methodical in my actions and deliberate. And just, even though for me, it seemed like forever, it actually, from the time it occurred to the time where the paramedics got there, it was only 40 minutes. In 40 minutes, we managed to get them off of the river into the raft and 2 miles downstream. So that's pretty good. Wow. And, you know, it was a tough day, but, and I hope I never have to do that again. And I hope I never get this award again, but I'm very honored. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the recognition and I know that any of my colleagues would do the same thing for me. So I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Well, your colleague is lucky to have you on the PUD, and we're lucky to have you. So thank you very much.
Yep. Well said, Andrew. Okay.
Thank you.
And the patient is doing well?
Yes. In recovery, and it's going to be a long road, but they're going to be just fine.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
This Commissioner Olson, you know, you kind of made light of being calm, but it takes a pretty special person to remain calm and thinking clearly when faced with those kinds of situations. And I commend you for that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Commissioner Olson.
A round of applause. Well done, Andrew.
Thank you all.
Yep.
Thank you.
Next is item 2, comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public on items not on today's agenda? Please state your first and last name for the record. So first up, we have Mr. Chan. Good morning, Mr. Chan. You have 5 minutes.
Hi, can you hear me good?
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, Happy New Year. And thanks to the three commissioner and John Harlow and his staff for not increasing our rate. That is a very good thing. And however, I'm concerned about using up some of the reserve, but that's a subject for another day.
Hey, John, this is Commissioner Olson. I'm right on point with you on that one.
Okay. I just want to compliment your organization. I'm a commissioner for the South County Fire. We have interaction with your PUD, and I heard nothing but good things about you guys. And also, I'm on the board of Snow 911, which is an emergency call center, and operate all the radio tower. Again, the same thing, they told me that the PUD staff are really working professional way. So in a sense, I want to thank you on that. Now, the reason I call is this, the Sunday Herald front page article on December 20th, 2020. I speak to you as your boss. the little citizen that with whom all of you are working for. And I assume that you heard about a lot of other bosses' input on that. But I'm here not to come to criticize, but I want to offer supports and suggestions to you. Negative articles on the front page is, as an elected official, I know is not good, but I have confidence all three of you are smart and very good people. You guys can work it out. But at the same time, I know the public might thinking you may be dysfunctional, but I don't think so. But here's my suggestion is to consider to expanding your commission to 5 members based on RCW 54-12-010. And they read that a commission consisting of 3 members in the 3 commissioner district and 5 members in 5 commissioner districts. So I know you can expand to 5 commissioner. Now I know I have limited time, so I'm going straight to the point. The reason I think it's a good for a 5 commissioner. Number one, if you look at any big company with $700 million revenue and over 1,000 people, they probably have more than 3 board members and usually 7 all the way up to 15. So for, because you're dealing with a lot of complex issues, it is very difficult for you right now that to 3 people to oversight all this. The second reason is a study committee. Right now at this condition, you do not have a study committee because anytime you talk to another commissioner, it's become a quorum. So you guys can't even have a cup of coffee. So how can you develop a relationship without a cup of coffee? So I really encourage you that if you can have a 5 board member, then have a committee because you study really complex issues. So you really need to do rating all kinds of options and play what if. So with a committee, you can do that. And rather than discuss all this, you know, in the meeting. And the number 3 point is what I call governance. I know all 3 of commissioners are the guardrail for the whole organization. You are the check and balances. And there's a thin line between working well with the administration, definitely is a good administration, but at the same time though, you do have the governor, you have the check and balance. So, and we can see that. A good example is a large utility company, PG&E down in California, they fail. Now we can blame the CEO for getting the wrong direction, but as investor, they are holding the board accountable because they are the one who set the guardrail. So I am your stockholder. I am the investor, stockholder of the PUD. So I really rely on you to do that job so that we don't get into a situation like PG&E. And all three commissioners are really smart, are good people. I definitely hope you can consider that. And I'm really thankful for all 3 of you have done and keeping the PUD and your staff running really good, especially this really difficult time. I thank you very much for the time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chan, for your comments. We have a couple more. Next we have Mr. James Deal. Good morning, Mr. Deal. You need to unmute yourself. Mr. Deal, can you unmute the software? Okay, there's another person. I'll call on that person. This ends in a phone number 1110. So I will unmute. Are you there?
Hello, this is James Deal. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I'm hearing you over your phone. Good morning or good afternoon, Mr. Deal.
Are you getting feedback?
Nope, it's working perfectly.
Okay. So what I was going to say is that I sent you a FOIA, a request for documents. And I want to point out that the New Mexico Public Regulatory Commission ruled that smart meters provide no public benefit. And the New Mexico Public Regulatory Commission denied utility company applications to install them. So in the email I sent you, I published a link to that conclusion. Now, the PUD system is exempt from the Washington Public Utility Commission, which regulates private utilities, but presumed that public utilities would be honest and people-oriented, but it's not apparently when it comes to this smart meter issue. The New Mexico PUC ruled that the company that was applying for permission to install smart meters did not demonstrate that smart meters would save money, did not demonstrate that smart meters would produce energy efficiency, did not show that customers want smart meters, did not evaluate alternatives, did not say how it would protect customer data privacy, and did not address security issues. So if I've asked in a request for documents that the PUD provide documents addressing these issues. And I also want to know, is the commission committed not to authorize spending of $90 million on smart meters until there's a vote of the people? I understand that legally it's not required, but are you nevertheless committed to asking the public if they want to spend this? And I've previously pointed out that Con Edison has self-reporting. And if people don't self-report, they get charged $19 and a meter reader goes out to read the meter. So you don't need to spend $90 million. And you can spend the $90 million connecting up the county with high-speed internet, which is what we really need to boost our economy. And so kids can, whenever there's a pandemic, study remotely. So I will publish the answer to all of the requests for documents that I've submitted on my website at jamesrobertdeal.org/smart-meters. So I urge you to add two more members to the commission so the commission can have discussions with each other that don't constitute a public meeting. And thanks again for your listening. And bear in mind, a recent report says that the big wireless spent around $101 million bribing the members of Congress and state legislators to vote in their direction. So we have to wonder how much of this money filters down to local PUDs. So guard against any untoward influence from donors. The smart meters do no good, save no money, use more electricity, and a lot of people affects their pacemakers. And so keep doing the good things you're doing and don't do the bad things that I'm fearful that you may be doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Deal. Okay, we have no other comments from the public. Next is item 3, our CEO General Manager briefing and study session. And for those listening in, this is normally in the morning, but we didn't have a morning session today. So good afternoon, John. What do you have for us today?
Good afternoon. So as part of the packet, the legislative update was included. And we do have Kim Johnson, Brenda White, and Clark McGisick here to answer any questions that you had on the legislative update that was in the packet. Are there any questions?
Any questions, commissioners?
No, I really appreciate the way you've organized things and presented them to us. Very grateful for that.
And this is Commissioner Olson. I support Commissioner Wolf's comments. How this report has been transformed is just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a huge kudos to Kim. Kim and her team.
And I agree. I have no questions, but I do. I like the interesting read section. I think the whole, anyway, it's a great report. Thank you very much. I know it takes a lot of work.
I'm glad you appreciate it. Thanks.
So if there's no other questions, we are going to have Clark McGeisick just give us a preview of the 2021 Washington State Legislative Session. Clark, Happy New Year.
Clark, you're muted.
There we go. Once I went to full screen, I lost it. Can you hear me okay now?
Yes.
Outstanding. Yes. Good afternoon and Happy New Year to everyone. Happy to be here and running through a state legislative report. I know the last thing we want to do entering the new year is take a break and look back into 2020, but we're going to start off by doing that. Let's see. Here we go. We're going to start off by diving into 2020 and just taking a look at how we got to where we're at now, both through the legislative session last year, as well as the interim, which we're technically still in. And then we'll be looking ahead into 2021. That means, you know, considering everything that's going on, what does a remote session look like as the legislature will, for the most part, be meeting remotely? What is the impact and importance of the revenue forecast as well as the budgets? And what are some of the key legislative issues that we'll be looking at in 2021? There's a lot of known unknowns, but there's also a lot of unknown unknowns that we're looking at. We'll also revisit our 2021 principles and reporting, and then leave it open for questions and discussion. But of course, please jump in at any time if you have any thoughts, comments, questions as I run through this. So looking back at 2020, the legislative session, we were following on the heels of 2019, which saw the successes of the Clean Energy Transformation Act and a few other carbon emissions reductions policies and proposals. There were further efforts to reduce carbon. Some of those policies that we looked at were beneficial electrification authority, a low carbon fuel standard or clean fuel standard, as well as a cap and trade or cap and invest proposals. All of those three, for the most part, proposals were ultimately not successful at the legislative level, but we'll chat a little bit later that we expect to be revisiting those issues again this next year. Early in the 2020 session, the Washington State Supreme Court ruled much of the clean air rule invalid. And what this ultimately means is that the Department of Ecology was deemed to not have the authority to regulate indirect emitters. This resulted in several legislators introducing bills to kind of try and patch up that gap in authority at that point. And those proposals were not successful as well. We also saw, and we chatted as well through some of the session last year, ecological impacts or proposals, such as environmental and social impacts of certain building materials as new facilities and buildings are being constructed, as well as a net ecological gain. There used to be a no net impact, more or less, standard. This proposal, the net ecological gain, shifted that thought that projects needed to prove that the either surrounding or somewhere within the state ecology would benefit from these proposals. We also spent a lot of time looking at and ultimately supporting a successful equitable access to community solar proposal. This intended to expand access to solar generation through various funding opportunities. But unfortunately, as the session came to a close last year, of course, the pandemic was ramping up at that point, and the writing was pretty clear on the walls for the legislature as well as the executive that funding was going to be a significant issue. So to address that, at least in the initial near term, Governor Inslee vetoed almost $500 million in that biennium's budget. And this unfortunately included one of the few successful proposals that we deeply engaged in, the access to community solar proposal. So that was ultimately vetoed as well. Quick run through kind of a timeline of near the end of session and immediately afterwards. Just about a week and a half before sine die or the final day of regular session, the legislature approved $100 million for COVID-19 response. It was a large amount at that time. Looking back, not so much at this point, just at the time though, it was an appropriate move to make. March 12th, we saw sine die again, the final day of regular session. The following day, PUD closed our offices. About a week and a half later, the governor issued the stay home, stay healthy order. About a month later, the governor's proclamation around Open Public Meetings Act, as well as the Public Records Act, was expanded to include remote commission meetings. And then early May, public utility districts were included in ratepayer protection proclamations. you'll note about a month and a half before this, the PUD was already voluntarily had put a prohibition, or had stopped charging late fees and disconnecting due to non-payment, things like that. It's worth noting that this proclamation and those prohibitions are extended through the end of April 2021, which is a little bit beyond what the general winter moratorium schedule is at this point. And it does correlate as well with the end or scheduled end of the regular session as well. So as COVID was going on as well, there was a lot of rulemaking activity this interim as well. And really front and center here is the Clean Energy Transformation Act rulemaking processes. And these numbers up here are actually the overall numbers throughout the whole process. But let's see, this year specifically, Snohomish staff participated in roughly 30 workshops, filed 13 comment letters, and presented at two workshops as well. Overall, throughout the whole CETA rulemaking process to date, we've participated in over 50 workshops and filed 20 comment letters. We've been deeply and consistently engaged with agency leads, decision makers, broad group of stakeholders to find general common understandings, as well as advocate for PUD positions, needs, and concerns. There are several remaining issues that need to be resolved, and those will be revisited in 2021. That's uncertain if those will occur over this upcoming session or perhaps following that. We also saw clean buildings bill rulemaking process, as well as a brief appliance efficiency rulemaking process. Our engagement with those, we were present and participating in all of those workshops, but the level of engagement was not as necessary as that which we saw in the Clean Energy Transformation Act. And let's see, there we go. In 2020, obviously, we saw quite a big election. However, at the state level and at the legislative level, kind of came out the same almost as we came in, at least numerically. So both parties, the Democrats and Republicans, both lost a seat as well as gained a seat in each chamber. Governor Inslee was reelected, and Representative Denny Heck, Congress member, was elected as Lieutenant Governor to fill Lieutenant Governor Habib's position or vacancy as he's exiting this year. So ultimately the legislature's partisan makeup will remain the same in 2021 as it was in 2020. So looking ahead, session starts this upcoming Monday. So ready or not, here we come. We're entering the beginning of the biennium. So that means that we're entering a long session, 105 days for the regular session. And that's in order to craft new budgets, capital, operating, and transportation. So we start this Monday and we're slated to end the regular session the end of April. I believe it's the 25th, more or less, is the expected sine die. As mentioned, and due to COVID and to pandemic impacts, the legislature, for the most part, will be meeting remotely. The House almost entirely, and the Senate will be doing somewhat of a hybrid model, but they'll be mostly almost entirely meeting remotely as well. There will be some procedural and process kind of in-person issues that need to be taken care of the first day of session, but beyond that will be mostly remote. Committee meetings, however, are almost unchanged, their cadence at least. So the proposed schedules at this point, they'll be meeting multiple committees will be meeting at the same time, and those committees will also be multiple times per week. So it'll be pretty fast paced there. There has been requested limit to number of the bills that legislators introduce from the majority party in order to try and keep things to a focus and keep things running smooth. And I noted here, but since then I've seen otherwise, that there was thought to be a potential shift in the cutoff calendar, perhaps because of maybe these differing paces to allow more time for initial review of legislation. It looks like that might not be the case, and this calendar might somewhat reflect what we've seen before. So ultimately, what all this means actually for us, for Snohomish and our engagement at the legislative level, is that there is going to be consistent and quick committee action. There's likely to be perhaps fewer bills, but or at least bill hearings. However, the review and input for those and our response and engagement will need to be quick and rapid and thorough as well. And this is in part because there are just some unknowns. So some things might seem like they're going slowly, but then tick up a lot faster than perhaps they would have before.
This Commissioner Olson, I do have one question on, will hearings where there's testimony given, will those also be virtual so we could dial into those?
Absolutely. So okay. Kind of like in a normal session, they will be on TVW, both live.
Oh, they'll be recorded. On the TV, but not dial in and participate then.
You can. So that's one of the other components as well of the remote session is that testimony is open remotely as well to the public. Okay. Where before you had to attend in person, there were a few select committees that allowed remote testimony kind of as a testing foot in the water. But yeah, here we'll see remote public testimony. There are some guidelines on kind of how that's set up and how the public engages, but yes, that is available as well.
Clark, as a follow-up, and I'm really glad that Commissioner Olson mentioned that or asked about that. Would there be some way we could get a heads up, maybe through District Daily or somehow? I'd like to know about the hearings too. So if we could know, you know, at least a day ahead, maybe.
And is the thought of, when committee hearings or maybe certain bills are being heard or are coming up around the corner?
Yeah, is that too much to ask?
I'll see what we can do just because sometimes including bills being heard and how they get scheduled and added to the agenda, it honestly can be last minute. I'm not certain what that means with this remote setup and the requirements for remote testimony. Maybe they won't change as fast, but let me revisit with colleagues and see what we can do.
Okay. And after you have finished, I do have a couple of other questions.
This Commissioner Olson again. We're talking about testimony, but I am assuming in saying that we aren't individually, would put it upon ourselves to testify without communication with a full board. I don't know how that would work.
And Commissioner, you're asking were I to testify that I would check in with the board beforehand, just to clarify your question.
Well, no, to clarify, if I as a commissioner were to call in and I would, other than as a representative of the board, I would not give a testimony, right?
Commissioner Olson, this is Ann.
I
think you're referring back to our governance policies where the board acts as a board. And so normally when the PUD is putting in testimony in Olympia, it's done through staff and not through individual commissioners. I think that's what you were asking.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we want to make sure, of course, that the testimony that Clark and staff are providing is, you know, consistent with board direction.
With
our policies and all kinds of, all of that.
I just didn't want to send a misleading, the way I initiated my question was I thought, oops, I think I've sent the wrong message. So thank you, Ann, for bringing me around.
Sure.
I think that's really clear in our policies, Commissioner Olson, about when we can speak, you know.
I understand that, and I would agree with you, but I was thinking back on the way I posed the question. I didn't want to leave the impression that was what I was talking about. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll say part of, our review and analysis, as well as how, you know, we engage here is just like last session with our principles, the five sets of principles that we we'll revisit that a little bit later in the presentation, but that will be just the same guardrails and framework as we worked with last year.
Okay.
All right, a few big issues as well. Obviously the pandemic has had severe economic impacts across not just the state, but obviously the nation and world as well. But one major impact for Washington that we've seen, and this is initially in the early phases of the pandemic, was we saw a $9 billion shortfall in expected revenue over the next few years. And this is very substantial for a state, I mean, for anybody, but especially a state of Washington size. Thankfully, I can't say that it's optimistic, but it's certainly less pessimistic that that revenue shortfall is shrunk from $9 billion to the most recent revenue forecast in November down to $3.6 billion through mid-2023. So that still leaves a very substantial gap in the expected revenue at the state level, but 3.6 at this point is, again, certainly less pessimistic than what we saw with the $9 billion. But we'll see this have pretty strong influence on the way that both budgets are proposed, as well as any general legislative proposals that have dollar impacts. What happens with those dollars at the end of the day? Where do they go and how are they funded?
I have a question related to that, please. Mm-hmm. So in this state, we have a few multi-billion dollar companies that pay, I have heard, no income tax, and we don't have a state income tax. But is there some thought about how the state could, I mean, is that like a B&O tab? I just want to know, why can't the state benefit more from some of these multi-billion dollar companies? That may not be a question for you, Clark, but I do think about it, that so few pay so little and the majority pay, you know, so much. So
I will say, and this doesn't maybe directly involve the PUD, but those are some issues that have been raised, historically, but especially this session. We'll mm-hmm. likely, almost certainly see at least some of those topics visited over this session.
Thank you.
Yes, Commissioner Olson, I agree with Commissioner Wolf. It is a dilemma, but you know, what they'll do is they'll say, you do that to us and we'll take our toys elsewhere. You know.
They do anyway.
Well, that's true too. You're right.
All right, and continuing on the financial and budgetary path here. So there's going to be substantial transportation budget concerns as we're constructing the transportation budget. And in part, this comes from the culvert replacement mandate from the Supreme Court. By 2030, culverts that are impacting fish flows must be replaced or improved upon. There are estimated costs, at least at this point, that's going to cost up to $3.7 billion. The pandemic has also impacted the transportation budget as well, due to a reliance on the gas tax, as well as just general toll revenues. So there's been less people on the roads generally, less people are consuming gasoline, less people are driving across those tolls and paying those tolls. So there's been an estimated hundreds of millions of dollars in a revenue gap there as well. On a different note though, the Supreme Court relatively recently struck down I-976. This was the $30 car tab mm-hmm. Initiative. And this resecured a major source of revenue for the transportation budget as well. So a little bit of give and take, but ultimately still facing some pretty significant and severe challenges for the state's transportation budget. We're also—
Excuse me, do you have a rough idea of how much more revenue that will bring in?
The striking down of I-976?
Uh-huh, yes.
I don't off the top of my head. I'm happy to look that up and see if I can get that.
I mean, it wouldn't have to be precise, but just like how many millions or billions?
I know that it's substantial. I will say, and again, I'm sorry, I don't have quite an estimate off the top of my head, but I will say it was enough that, you know, several different entities approached the issue. They continued relatively as is and didn't stop collecting that revenue at the state level. So I don't think we're gonna actually procedurally see a shift in the dollars coming in. However, it's the certainty looking ahead, I would say.
Okay.
So I know that doesn't quite answer your question. I'll see if I can pull up numbers and share with the clerks later on. There are still the McCleary ruling requirements that the state has to fund McCleary, and there's concerns that, you know, there's still more work to be done there as well. And funding education is a major portion of the state's budgets. And then of course there's the Employment Security Department as well as unemployment benefits. The significantly greater demand that we've seen through ESD, Employment Security Department, as well as generally what we saw with the fraud scheme earlier in the pandemic process as well. very significant loss of almost $576 million. Some of that, I believe, $300 million. I don't recall the exact number. It more or less has been recouped, but there's still a pretty significant amount that was not. So looking ahead at the governor's proposed budget, and this is relatively recent, and I do want to clarify before I dive into this that the proposed budget from the governor really ultimately frames and drives key policy discussions and budgetary negotiations. So it's not necessarily a firm document, but it will certainly be a major driving factor in a lot of discussions and decisions coming down throughout 2021. And the governor in his proposed budget emphasized strongly business assistance and unemployment and equity, infrastructure investments and rental assistance. These issues largely in the face of course of the pandemic and of capstone primarily was environmental priorities as well as equity priorities as well. And we'll dive into these environmental priorities a bit more in a second, but these mostly include the Climate Commitment Act, which is a cap and trade proposal, Healthy Homes and Clean Buildings Act, in part building electrification, also including capital project funding as well, Clean Energy Fund, about $100 million proposed by the governor, and Clean Fuel Standard, as well as efforts to further electrify the transportation sector, including efforts pretty substantial in ferry and terminal electrification work as well. So diving into some of those carbon issues, both directly and indirectly related to the governor's proposed budget, we're going to see a cap and trade or cap and invest proposal come around in 2021. And this is likely going to be building off of what we have seen previously in 2019 and 2020, as well as some shifts over, you know, whatever has naturally occurred over the last couple of years, including interests and proposals from the governor as well. And, you know, one of the major questions we have here and concerns and priorities is, were a cap and trade or cap and invest proposal to move forward, how does that operate in parallel with CETA? And how do, you know, we as the PUD ensure that the requirements for meeting with CETA aren't doubled or overlapped with those in cap and invest or cap and trade? So one thing in particular, we'll be looking out for those discussions over the session. Another one, which I should take a step back real quick with cap and trade, that at least at this point, as far as the breadth of discussion has been kind of the priority or that the main overarching environmental and carbon emissions reductions proposal at this point. So that's not to take anything away from the next ones, but that's kind of been what's taken the most air out of the room, I should say. So up next, we've also got the carbon tax and green bonding potential proposal. And what this might look like is some sort of a price on carbon with those dollars coming in and turned into a bonding program to help fund clean energy investments, programs and projects and things like that. Again, this has not had as much discussion at this point as a cap and trade or cap and invest idea or proposal, but would also certainly bring up the question, how would something like this, a price on carbon, operate in parallel again with the Clean Energy Transformation Act? There's also the possible effort to continue response, as I briefly noted earlier, the clean air ruling. This has not necessarily been discussed, but certainly is, you know, something that could be on the table or some of the other proposals to fall through or seemingly to fall through likely later in the session. But certainly cap and trade will be the priority, or at least the one that takes up the most time and attention, at least early in session. We've also got electrifying transportation, of course, and clean fuel standard is kind of this in between of carbon reductions as well as transportation electrification. I threw it here because it's got the concept contains mechanisms to help incentivize transportation electrification. There's also the possibility that the legislature will entertain California's 100% EV order from last year. However, the state legislature, Washington legislature, passed a ZEV, ZEV, or zero emissions vehicle standard last year, which may itself allow Washington to pursue whatever California's rules are put in place in the next few years, just through its own rulemaking process. There may be some interest in pursuing a legislative approach as well, though. And this, of course, as mentioned earlier, with the reliance on gas tax for the transportation budget, could have implications for that transportation budget, further complications in a trying time for that budget. There's also interest in EV charging infrastructure and improving access and available information. I think trying to standardize somewhat similar to like what a user would experience at a gas station, more or less. And also interest in incenting and reducing vehicle miles traveled. This could come with public transportation, which would likely come through hybrid or electric transportation there, as well as actually just limiting the number of miles and times people get into cars as well. And then we've got electrifying buildings as well. We've got the beneficial electrification authority proposal likely to come around again in 2021. Likely resemble something similar to what we saw in 2020 and what we had discussed as well. Also, in alignment with the governor's proposed environmental package, earlier mentioned with his budgets, there's the potential to transition natural gas usage to electricity, both in new construction as well as existing structures. So something to keep an eye out for in this coming year. And all of this, I think, is important to keep in mind. There was the successes with the building efficiency bill in 2019, as well as the appliance efficiency bill also in 2019. How do all of these things fit, build off of, or otherwise with those proposals or those statutes at this time? We're going to be facing some water issues and proposals to look out for. In fall of 2019, you might remember that the Seattle Times broke a pretty big story about water rights and banking. We're likely to see a few more proposals revisit that issue as well. There might be potential responses as well to wildfires and whatever impacts those might have had on water infrastructure, access to drinking water, et cetera. And I'll talk a little bit more about wildfires and their relevance to electrical infrastructure as well in a little bit. There's also the opportunities for small distributed generation in water infrastructure, such as turbines and pipes, and just general potential climate impacts on water basins as well. Equity, as mentioned, especially with the governor's proposed package and budgets, is a major component and is likely to find itself either as a component of a lot of proposals or perhaps in some cases maybe standalone proposals, but will continue to play a significant role nonetheless. And this is certainly magnified with the impacts of COVID-19 and the pandemic. And relative to us more directly, we might see revisiting of some of what we see in the governor's proclamation, the prohibition on disconnects and charging late fees, things like that. We might see efforts to try and put those in statute. This also includes potentially extending payment plans and arrearage management, as well as reducing barriers to assistance programs, as well as streamlining access to those programs as well. There's also likely to be a whole bunch of different responses to employer needs, as well as employee needs over the course of the pandemic and facing some of those challenges, maybe that are more near term or could be long term as well.
I read that Governor Inslee has extended the ban on evictions for people who can't pay their rent relating to the COVID, you know, downturn and unemployment and so forth. So, I mean, that was a gubernatorial decision and action. So maybe, you know, maybe the Congress, legislature isn't really involved, but I just thought it was interesting and good that he's able to, it's going to hurt landlords, but that's not our concern here, but it does have to do with the equity issue and COVID.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Well, am I misreading this? That's within the purview of the board, is it not? What does this apply to? Revisit, disconnection, reconnection?
Yes.
That doesn't apply to us.
So and this is somewhat speculative. So I don't want to put too much meat to these bones, but there is a possibility that there could be interest in perhaps making those prohibitions on disconnects or those prohibitions on charging late fees permanent.
That supersedes our authority then?
In that case, that is certainly a concern.
Well, that's not going to happen.
I will say there's actually been discussion that there could be constitutional issues with that right off the
bat. Yeah, you better bet it would be.
Yeah, so I'm not.
Woke me up.
Yeah, so I'm not. I don't want to overemphasize this at this point, but it is certainly something that we could see. And again, leaning on those principles we addressed last year, and we'll address in a little bit. Those will be a major component of our review and however we respond to legislation.
Okay.
And we've got technology. Obviously, is significantly of more higher interest and more importance probably than ever before at this point. We've got cybersecurity in the face of increased daily digital activity. You know, more folks are working from home or working digitally, whatever it might be. And of course, we've seen recent activity as well that begs perhaps more attention here. There's data privacy efforts, and this is in part also heightened with perhaps some of the contact tracing or the COVID exposure apps. Just general more interest and heightened interest around these issues. There's interest in advancing the smart grid or utility of the future technologies. And in part, this is actually addressed under the governor's proposed budget and priorities as well. And we've also got expanding broadband access, which is likely to see a focus on incentives, on funding that access or that expansion, as well as partnerships, however those may look, and visiting poll attachment rates as well. And just a couple of things we touched on these, so I'll run through this one a little bit faster, but likely to see the net ecological gain rather than no net impact standard come around again, mm-hmm. potential for tightening regulations around building materials and their environmental and social impacts as well. Mm-hmm. And certainly in response to, especially in Oregon, but we'll see various responses to the 2020 wildfires in relation to utilities. And this could come in a myriad of different ways. It could be revisiting liability concerns or maybe even vegetation management, things like that. So these are certainly issues that we expect to see directly regarding the wildfires. So as mentioned, I want to revisit our 2020, now looking into 2021 legislative principles, and I'll touch on reporting in just a minute. I wanted to maintain the principles that we had established last session on what we really lean on as far as our review and analysis of bills and how we engage at the legislative level to make it clear what are our key priorities. And were any proposal, I'll phrase it this way, were any proposal to negatively impact any of these principles, it would seriously limit, if not prohibit, us from taking a supportive stance on some sort of a proposal. So those are issues we have and could walk through during session, but these are things that we need, these boxes we need to check as we're analyzing and considering various proposals throughout session. And just to underscore that, it's our commitment to reliability of service and a value of public power heritage, and to protect the PUD's ability to provide safe and reliable power and water, our commitment to affordability, and that we will protect our ability to provide power and water at its lowest reasonable cost, our commitment to community safety, that we prioritize the safety of our employees and communities above all else, local control, and that we protect our governing body's local control, and environmental stewardship, that we value our natural environment and take our stewardship responsibilities seriously. And visiting the reporting component of this, also a continuation of 2020, intend to mirror what we saw and what we provided and how we provided information to you during session and then rolling into the interim when that comes around. So if you recall during session last year, we kind of had an on-off schedule, if you want to call it that, where we provided a report to you every meeting, but I came and reported on those reports every other meeting. And then in the quote unquote off meetings, I was available for questions, kind of like what we've done over the interim, the every other meeting. Of course, this is and begs to be flexible. Were there a need or a desire for me or government relations staff to be present to report on any of that, we can make that happen. But generally, this would be our steps moving ahead and how we would report to you. And okay.
Would this be a good time for me to ask you a couple of questions?
Yes.
Okay, there's been a lot of increasing interest in looking seriously at what our options are for increasing our board membership from 3 to 5. And I think you've been probably too busy to, you know, give a lot of attention to this. So I just want to ask you if you could let us know what progress you might be making on that at some point. Because if we're going to do it, if we're going to decide to do it as a board, if we're going to go forward with it, we need to not delay too long, because I know one of the procedures is to do a signature gathering, get something on the ballot, and there may be other ways. I don't know, because that's what Kim Johnston mentioned, that she would be pursuing, or that your team would be researching it and would get back to us on what our options are. So I think a lot of us are very interested in that.
Yeah, and if I can comment really quick, we have met internally to visit this issue since it was mm-hmm. brought up, and we are digging into statute and what does exist to better understand kind of okay. the landscape ahead of us. So that issue has not been lost. Okay. We are working on addressing that.
Great. And this, Commissioner Olson, I thought also that was going to include possibly just a carve out in the RCW for the PUD, right?
That was one thing
that we had heard. To bypass the normal process.
Yeah, that was one thing that we had heard.
Okay, great.
So that is something in the back of our minds as we're digging through this as well.
And I think the other part we need to remember is when we talked about this, we agreed that there'd be some analysis of it. So
not just the
means of getting there, but also some analysis. So I expect that we'll be hearing relatively soon about it.
For sure. And so, Clark, is one of the options you're talking about, is that possibly an amendment to the part of the RCW that spells out procedure? And that would mean working with legislators.
I think at this point, we're not quite at this stage in the process where we can say what necessarily our options are. I think we're trying to understand the landscape so we can understand what potential options are. Okay. Again, we did hear that was one thing that was discussed and mentioned during the recent commission meeting.
Right.
Okay. And I'll just chime in here. We, as Clark has said, duly noted the last commission meeting where that was teed up, and Kim and Clark and team, we are looking into this, having discussions, and we'll figure out an appropriate path forward to bring back to the board with an analysis and what potential options there may be in front of us. So coming soon.
Okay, good. My other question has to do with the connection between legislation and policy. And so the board has oversight over the PUD. So it just seems like it would be sensible, logical, and appropriate for us to be able to have input, or maybe not input, but to be a little bit apprised of the comment letters that our PUD submits. Not that the board would write them, but that we should be able to read them and give you feedback, because after all, what has to do with policy more than legislation? I mean, it's huge. And so tell me if I'm thinking incorrectly on that.
Well, I think part of what, and I'll go, if I can go back in the presentation, the intent here of the principles is, you know, for an opportunity to provide, make sure that we've got a common understanding of what our framework is, that we're working towards the same goals under the same principles. And part of our reporting opportunities and staying consistent and updating with you guys is, and part of that was to actually include our formal and written comments that we've provided. And it's been particularly in rulemaking for the most part over the last several months. Does that respond to?
Well, especially as related to local control and the fact that we are responsible you know, we're at least ostensibly the policymakers, and we're supposed to also have oversight over the whole operation of the PUD, according to what I've read in lots of places. So I was just looking up something on the WAPUTA website, and they talk again about mainly, you know, our big responsibilities are having to do with rate adjustments and rate setting and policy, and also just oversight of all the operations of the PUD. So it just doesn't seem right for us not to be aware of what goes into the comment letters before they're sent out, so that we can at least ask questions. And then
I think if I may add, it's worth noting here too, that with kind of these principles in mind and our approach that we've taken with the legislature, is that we're responding to proposals that are coming in front of us and using these principles, for example, as a framework or a lens for analysis in general, and then providing whatever written or even verbally testified information in front of you through the reports as well. I think that part of these principles are intended to ensure that the commission does have their say in what and how we're analyzing legislation. And it's to help provide kind of that backstop in how we are, again, analyzing the proposals in front of us. This was in part last session when we went through at least the principal process, was to ensure that we were able to stay up to speed and up to date at the legislative pace, because it is so quick. And I do want to make sure that I didn't provide, or leave kind of the thought that because the session is remote, it might be slower. I'm actually thinking that we're likely to see a pretty vicious or ferocious pace at the legislative level. And some of the discussions I've heard, be it with legislators or staff or other folks, is that expect to see months of stakeholder work in the matter of actually weeks. And this includes some of the big legislative items. So, I think the hope is that these principles will help provide that input and say, in order to make sure that we are staying on top of things and that we are still coming back to the commission every meeting and reporting on the work that we're doing, and that you see the letters and the testimony and things like that.
So let me just chime in here a little bit as well. And that's very well said, Clark. Nobody's disputing, Commissioner Wolf, that the board does have oversight, but that was the reason we adopted and had the board adopt these principles, in which gave guidance to Kim and Clark and our team to go and provide input and work on these issues. And as Clark has alluded to, oftentimes these things are moving very, very quickly. And we need to have that overall guidance, but Clark and the team are in the weeds managing these things with the overall guidance and using these principles to make sure that we're keeping within the direction that the policies in which the board has affirmed.
Well, I would agree with these five principles. And I would also assume and trust that we on the board also are keeping these in mind also. And so we wouldn't be at odds with these. You know, it would just be like oversight.
Well, Commissioner Wolf, I guess
not oversight, Commissioner Wolf. That's getting into the weeds. That's getting into the daily work that the team and staff are doing.
I think we'd be reaching beyond what our board policies have set for that, the line between our general manager. But I also think if reading letters that have been sent out after they've been sent, I'm fine with that if that's easy to do or whatever. I'm not concerned about that. But we could add 2 weeks to the process of sending out a letter if the commissioners had to approve the letters or have feedback. Because we can only have feedback as a board. Individual feedback wouldn't be appropriate for us to be given individual feedback to staff on each and every letter they send out. I think it'd be untenable to do that.
Well, I see your point. Yeah, I do accept that. So the letters that are comment letters after the fact, we get to read them. And we do that by requesting them.
This is Kim Johnston with Government Relations, Director of Government Relations. Any letter that I sign, mm-hmm. which would include all of the letters for CETA rulemaking, mm-hmm. are always included in the government report that you all have been receiving for every commission. So in an effort to increase our transparency with the, you know, starting at the start of last year, we made that commitment that any letter with my signature on it, that is included in those reporting. Okay. So you've had access to every comment letter that we have made.
Cool. Okay. Thank you very much.
Any other questions, commissioners? Clark, I have one question, and this is the question you're gonna hate, your crystal ball, but you know, we started out the year with the governor vetoing the community solar bill, and because of the, you know, huge impacts to the budget, it's really hard for me to imagine that he's going to move forward on much of his environmental agenda with the economic challenges of not just the state government, but businesses, individuals. Do you have some thoughts about this is a you know, really impressive agenda he's putting together, but where we might end up on this? Because I think everything has a price tag in here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I might be softballing my answer, so forgive me if I am. Part of the governor's proposal package and my intent behind saying that, you know, it's kind of the framework and guidelines for policy and budget discussions and negotiations throughout session. It is in part intended to be a bit ambitious, but I think that there is substantial interest, at least from the governor's office and probably a bit from the majority party as well, to pursue some of those policies and perhaps might see some of those investments, I guess, as that, such as, you know, the Clean Energy Fund investments or the ferry electrification might be seen as jobs creators or things like that. So you might see that as a component of discussions coming into session when addressing some of those price tags. Okay. But that also brings in the issue around, you know, the gap in revenue and things like that, that there are a lot of challenges that the state faces, even outside of these policy interests, that it's going to be a difficult session for anybody and everybody, for sure.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Any other questions, commissioners? Anything else this morning, John?
No, that should do it.
All right. Thank you all. Thank you, Clark. Great presentation.
Thank you. Nick? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to
job,
you too.
Clark.
You're going to save a little tire wear this year, not driving down to Olympia all the time. So
smaller expense report for sure. Yes,
that's a horrible drive, so that's good. So next is item 4, our consent agenda. We have item 4A, the approval of the minutes for the regular meeting of December 15th, 2020. B, bid awards, professional service contracts and amendments. And C, consideration of certification / ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. I will call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay. Are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? Yes, so please raise your hand. I'm not seeing any. Are there any questions or comments from the commissioners?
I have none.
Nope, I have none either.
I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item 5, public hearing in action. 5A, disposal of surplus property for the first quarter of 2021. I'll call for a motion.
Based on staff's recommendation that Intermountain Rigging and Heavy Haul, IRH, be allowed to withdraw their bid on the substation transformer K174 that was approved for sale to the highest bidder on December 15, 2020, and that a rebidding for this item will result in similarly priced bids, I move that IHR be allowed to withdraw their bid and that Transformer Technologies, as the second bid, be awarded this surplus item under the conditions of their original bid.
Okay, thank you. I will now convene a public hearing on the disposal of surplus property, first quarter 2021 supplement. And we had HUD here available to answer any questions. Are there any comments from the public regarding the surplus property supplement? So please raise your hand. I'm not seeing any other questions or comments from the commissioners.
I have none.
Nope, I have none either.
Okay, therefore I will close the public hearing and I will call for a vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. You got off easy, HUD. Next is item six, our CEO General Manager report. Do you have a report for us today, John?
I do. In fact, I'm excited to be able to brag, take some time to brag about our phenomenal team PUD's accomplishments for 2020. Some of them are due to the pandemic, some are in spite of the pandemic, and many of which are in addition to the pandemic. I'll tell you, this is an abbreviated list, significantly abbreviated. I'd asked the ELT to provide a few highlights from each of the divisions and areas for 2020, and the list was extraordinarily long. I will provide you with the entire list, but sit back and relax. I'll try to keep this under 2 hours with the abbreviated list. Start with, interestingly enough, even with the pandemic, construction was up over 20% from the previous year. And one special note of that is new meter sets. We set over 5,500 new meters this year compared to 4,200 meters a year ago. Just thought that was extremely interesting given, again, the pandemic and the shutdown for the construction trades for a considerable period of time. On a safety front, we completed all of the Safe Start training. That's 5 units totaling 10 hours of instruction for all employees. And that was a 2.5 year project that we finished up this year. The team also led, our safety team led a team of peer regional utilities to create and stand up a utility focused close call and near miss and safety learning opportunity website. This marks a significant milestone on a journey to share safety learning opportunities and near misses with our regional utilities. And this was really a phenomenal effort to get this put in place, but it helps us be able to coordinate much closer with our peer utilities across the region in regards to safety. And one, I think, special highlight as well on the safety front, most utilities saw an increase in injuries, not just, you know, from COVID, but overall. And it, you know, could be due to a lot of different things. But we have continued to decrease our injuries, and especially around severity rate. So that's really a high note, again, considering everything that we've been through this past year. Out of the finance group, we placed a refinancing that will reap significant benefits over the next few years in debt savings, finalized a 2021 budget with some cost stabilization and highlight no rate increase, successfully worked through multiple audits, including financial audits, state audits, with clean opinions and no findings. Certainly, you've already started to hear we talked about this throughout the year, and highlighted one key group that made this happen, but which was the help desk team, but the work from home. ITS cross-functional teams collaborated to implement the applications and the network infrastructure, the telephonic and cybersecurity required to support the district's work from home needs in response to the pandemic. Also, laptops, desktops, monitors, phones, mobile devices were deployed to support employee work from home needs. Nearly 70% of the district employees transitioned to remote work in support of the district's commitment to safety. New applications such as Microsoft Teams, Adobe eSignature, and the employee check-in were deployed to improve employee communication, work collaboratively and efficiently, work from home, and to enable the work from home experience. Also, several foundational systems such as mobility and the telephone capacity were expanded to address work from home operational and customer service needs. We implemented their new customer self-serve and electronic bill present bill presentation platforms. The project included many enhancements, such as the new MySnowPud.com portal, which provides an improved user experience for customers managing their district accounts, bills, and payments online. The new platform also improves functionality for CSRs and supporting our customer interactions. Also implemented a new bill estimation process. A new bill estimation program was deployed in October that incorporates weather adjustments in determining customers' consumption. The new program substantially improves the accuracy of customers' estimated bills and provides a better customer experience. We replaced the district's core energy trading and transmission management system. The system is fundamental to the operation of power scheduling department, including functions such as load forecasting, transmission data management, deal capture, generation and load scheduling, financial integration, and reporting. The new system enables the district to manage the BPA's new transmission requirements. Also completed a major upgrade on our advanced distribution management system, which manages outage response, restoration, and supports the safe and efficient operation of our distribution system. Completed a major cybersecurity improvement initiative, which upgraded our legacy infrastructure to the latest Microsoft security system. The result of this effort simplified the district's network access, faster internet response times, and reduced maintenance costs and improved the district's security. In the communications groups, and again, lots of stuff. This is just the highlights or abbreviated, I should say, list of accomplishments, but lots of community engagement progress, despite, again, the hurdles of the pandemic. And as you, as the board is well aware, we have really made a concerted effort to be more present in the community and supportive of the community to just build that goodwill throughout our area. The community support page on SnowPud, our little free libraries, our quarantine cookbooks, and reaching out to our longtime customers with masks and just a thank you. The COVID communication was constant and ongoing, including district daily editions, the Snow web page, customer and employee vlogs and interviews, and social media. Conversion of all our training to virtual or online training. We completely revamped our education program, classes, and resources, and you may remember we highlighted that at the last commission meeting. The print shop and mailroom team stayed on site and didn't miss a beat through the entire year supporting bills and payments. And again, that's a key process for us. There were multiple formal CI processes that were completed, both, you know, with operational improvements and cost savings. And again, the list is extensive. And then, as I mentioned, the successful MySnowPud rollout. In our D&E area, completed the 115 kV transmission line construction to serve the new Twin City substation up by Stanwood. Started the development of a wildfire mitigation plan, and the target completion for that is May of this year, so before fire season. Completed a $2.2 million work associated with a Sound Transit in Linwood Link extension, including relocation of transmission and underground of distributions at two crossings across I-5, transitioned our drafting, GIS, and maps and records to almost 100% work from home. And again, if you think about that's a huge deal and a huge lift. Executed the new wireline attachment agreements and small cell master agreement, license agreements, and completed an inspection and treatment over 26,000 wood poles. Out of our customer service area, service levels, again, with a challenging year, we still hit 70% on our service level, which hasn't been done since back before 2008. And if we would have, you know, again, without the pandemic and the increased call volumes and such, we would have hit the goal of 75%, which has never been done. Specifically, higher call volumes due to estimated billing, shifting resources to outbound true-up calling, and higher than anticipated call volume. All those things, you know, impacted that service level. But again, just a tremendous performance from the group. Work from home, again, I know there's overlap on this, but just want to highlight a couple more of the situations. From the week of March 16th through the March 20th, so 5 days, customer service employees transitioned to telecommuting status within that 5 day period. And it, again, in response to, or in communication with our peer utilities, many of them took 3 to 4 weeks or beyond to make that transition. The rapid response also provided a seamless transition for our customers with no lapse in service whatsoever. In August, we conducted the IBEW union member survey for the customer service staff, with 70% of employees reporting high levels of satisfaction, and almost 94% of the surveys responded stated they felt effective being able to do their work from home. The estimated billing, and I talked a little bit about the new program that we now have in place, but this was prior to, so the district, we resumed actual meter reads in June after several months of estimated bills. This meant previous estimations would be trued up for customers who were previously under or overestimated at that time. We were committed to making a positive difference for customers and communities, and thus developed an aggressive outbound customer outreach campaign to proactively inform customers of estimated and true up bills. Between June and July, CSRs made over 22,000 calls, and in partnership with IT and corporate communications, staff sent over 70,000 emails. The result was an overwhelming success in mitigating negative customer responses and creating positive connections with thousands of customers we might not normally engage with. And the customer response was extremely positive. The community support plan, again, you guys are well aware of that, but it developed a one-time assistance plan to help customers impacted by the pandemic. And with one-time immediate credit relief, we helped over almost 15,000 customers and a total assistance of 3.1 million. We achieved 109% of our energy impact, our Energy Independence Act compliance target with 46 million kilowatt hours. A huge part of this success is reaching 10% of all our residential customers with free energy saving bundles to help them manage consumption during the challenging year. We've already claimed 6.8 million of our BPA energy efficiency implementation reimbursement for this rate period, and we are well on track to maximize the amount of allocation available and ahead of schedule. Our electric vehicle program has brought important rebates on EV chargers to the market, as well as fully subscribed Fleet Karma electric vehicle research. We successfully applied for and achieved 3 grants to support electric vehicles and other innovation in our community. We have the direct current fast charger with the City of Everett, and our Clean Energy Fund 3 with Everett Transit and Housing Hope. And as you know, also the DER was launched, our distributed energy resource. Pilots were launched, the commercial time of day pilot, and we have the other 2 pilots well underway. And one last out of the energy service and customer service group, collections, we restarted unauthorized usage mitigation plan in July 2020 to begin disconnecting vacant addresses. And with that effort, well, with careful planning and alignment, and staying within the state guidelines, we were able to recapture approximately $2.4 million in unauthorized usage between June and December.
Oh, wow.
Wow, impressive.
Almost 12,000 targeted letters were sent to customers in arrears in September of 2020, and the total payments received for those accounts in arrears is $4.28 million as of the end of the year. So that's a huge dent in those receivables. So still on customer service and the customer experience, real-time payments were implemented, shifted thousands of customers previously on hybrid billing to paperless billing to support the COVID relief and reduce cost, and improve new accounts process, streamlining the paper needs and reducing start to finish timeline for the new accounts. Income qualified program improvements, we restructured that program from 6-tier to 2-tier. And the bill optimization, the team participated to develop a new invoice mockup for 9 different billing types. So that's contractor billing, construction billing, those types of things. And that was a huge improvement as well. Government relations helped build and support the $20 million low-income community solar legislation that passed the legislature. And we did talk about that, or Clark touched on that. Intensive cross-departmental collaboration drives Snohomish PUD interest through the Clean Energy Transformation Act, rulemaking in 2020. And just for context, SNOPUD staff were asked to present at 2 rulemaking workshops, participated in roughly 30 workshops, and filed 13 SNOPUD comment letters in 2020. So I'm about a quarter of the way through. You guys still okay? No, I'm just kidding. Almost done. Also in government relations, Governor Inslee publicly noted Snohomish PUD's great work related to our customer assistance in the wake of the pandemic and launched and implemented an outreach plan with local government officials. This provided a way for me to connect with local leaders and find shared issues of importance. In our generation power rates and transmission, the rates department worked with Customer and Energy Services and the board to implement the new EV fast charger rate. Power scheduling department, again, a huge, I'm singling these out just because of the amount of work it took to do this, but power scheduling group also transitioned, the entire group transitioned to work from home. Yeah. Our facilities developed and put in place protocols, policies, guidelines, and physical improvements for best practices to deal with the pandemic, telecommuting, and COVID viruses in our buildings. This included our custodial department implementing cleaning protocols for infected and potentially infected areas. The compliance department conducted a successful NERC reliability standard compliance peer review. This was accomplished despite significant impacts to the original plan due to the COVID. The power supply team, in coordination with other teams, made significant updates to phases 1 through 3 of the integrated resource plan process, which included a 4-month customer engagement to create the study scope and an hourly portfolio adequacy computer model to better evaluate needs and expand the DER, rate design, and BPA options considered to meet those needs. And the generation team safely and professionally responded to the hazardous February 2020 storm. And it, when I was reading through this, it reminded me of that storm that we had and all the rain, managing the Spada Lake levels before, during, and after a 5-foot, 10,000 cubic foot per second spill event to minimize impact to customers, landowners, facilities, downstream, executing the Combeck Dam Emergency Action Plan, including manning the dam 24/7 during the high spill. It was an all hands effort of biologists, engineers, operators, and administrative staff was tied for the second largest spill since the dams raised in 1984 and was completed safely, accurately, and by the book. And lastly, we had successfully launched our Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Initiative. And since September of 2020, we've coordinated the following 12 executive leadership sessions with our consultant, Sherelle Gordon. We've had multiple ELT one-on-one coaching sessions with Sherelle. I was able to do one vlog with Sherelle as we introduced the initiative. We did one all staff meeting with Sherelle. We've got 523 employee survey responses to our DEI survey. Over 200 employees have participated in focus groups with Sherelle, and over 91 employees have attended a one-on-one session with Sherelle. Again, I could not be more proud of what the team has accomplished. And again, I am not exaggerating when I say this is just a small portion of what the team has accomplished. And it is just phenomenal that we were able to accomplish it this year. And you've heard me say before, I'm sure, that we would never have wished to have a pandemic. But with the pandemic, it absolutely allowed us to demonstrate our true colors and what we're really made of and shine in the wake of really tough times throughout our area and really throughout the country. And as we've talked, or I've talked to my peers across the country, I'm really proud to say that I don't think there's any better team in the country than what we have here. And we demonstrated that throughout 2020. One last thing I was just going to mention, I have the opportunity to participate on the Members Representative Committee for NERC. I will represent the national, state, and municipal and transmission-dependent utilities on that committee. That's a committee of 6, and Scott Jones may correct me on this. I think it's 6 total on that committee. You have IOUs are represented, transmission operators are represented. I will be replacing Roy Jones, who is the CEO for Electric Cities. He is moving up to the NERC Policy Committee, and the MRC, the Members Representative Committee, actually provides input from all the utility representatives to the Policy Committee for consideration by NERC. So that'll be a nice opportunity to be get involved with that and certainly learn a lot along the way. So that's it.
Congratulations, that's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. It'll be an opportunity to continue to learn for sure.
Uh-huh. John, as Commissioner Olson, you mentioned that you would be getting information out to us that may even expand on that. Well, will we be getting that, Melissa, in the next week or so? Since I think you're probably the one that will be putting it together.
I have the complete list and I can send that out.
Yeah, well, it helps. It, when you hear it like this, it just... having a little background in some of those areas, and when John says that's a big deal, it's a big deal to be able to accomplish and the transitions. And I'd like to, it will help me very much to have that list soon.
I will get that out to you, all of you.
I'll just say, you know, it's a incredible list of accomplishments, but even more so when you think that this happened during a pandemic where you get the feeling how every department in the organization had to respond to that. And it just seems like it's, you know, been seamless. Of course it wasn't seamless, but it's just amazing. I'm been listening to a thing about how people responded to the Great Alaska Earthquake in 1964. And the theme was people just got in there and they just figured out what they had to do and they got it done. And that's sort of what our employees did. It's just incredibly impressive that people jumped in with both feet. You know, we've highlighted a couple of departments, customer service and the technology group, but I mean, it's all throughout the organization. It's very, very impressive.
Yeah, it is absolutely a testament to the caliber of folks that we have and the commitment that they have to serving the customers and the community. And that truly there was not a group that wasn't touched in some way, not just by the pandemic, but in operationally and had to adjust the way they did work because of the pandemic.
Yeah, when Commissioner Logan made his comment, the most recent comment, I was thinking on an individual level, that also speaks for what happened, you know, with Andy or Andrew McDonald's rescue and service to, you know, to his companion or his colleague. So from the one person to the whole 11 or 1200 employees that we have, they are outstanding. And
as Commissioner Olson again, I'm just thinking on top of that, you know, John, this wouldn't happen without a work environment. I don't want to use the word culture, but a work environment that allows that to happen. And I just, it hasn't always been there with the PUD. And so I am just so impressed with the scope of what's been done and with things that have been thrown at once in 100 years event.
Yep.
And what was accomplished, you know, I sit back here behind the scenes. I can't even begin to say I understand it and I can appreciate the work, but I was just thinking here, that doesn't happen without employees who want to give.
Yeah, who care?
Who are working, caring, which means that the culture of the utility or the work environment that's provided enables that. And I would imagine that they feel a great deal of gratification in individual teams and the utility as a whole.
Yeah, we just have phenomenal people. I could not be more proud of absolutely everyone from the ELT down to, I shouldn't say down, including everybody. Everybody has participated in a significant way to, again, demonstrate what we're made of.
Well, and I
don't have opportunities like this very often. And I'm, again, proud to say that I think our team hit it out of the park.
I'll use the word culture and say it's, you know, it's a culture of empowerment that made this happen. There is no way in the more traditional model of a leadership team making all these decisions to respond quickly. This you know, this could only happen where people are empowered to look at the parts of the organization they work in and suggest ways to get it done and get it done quickly. So.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing that it may have been on your list, but I wasn't sure, but in terms of performance, organizational performance, real-time information in the dashboards that have been built, and as a commissioner, those have been very helpful to me. And it kind of provides a window for me inside of what's going on in the utility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that was actually one that I highlighted. There was two that I left off.
Oh, did
off.
You? Well, I guess I didn't hear it.
No, I skipped over them. I was just looking back because you brought that up. I thought, man, I thought there was something on here. So there was two. One, we actually, we had a, and I think you're aware of this, but it was a successful engagement with the National Guard. We engaged with the Washington National Guard in a collaborative cybersecurity assessment to validate the district's corporate cyber IT readiness. And that was highly, highly successful. And the other was we had significant analytic dashboard deployments and enhancements rolled out to support both district operations and the pandemic, as you guys know, to the response and to keep you and the rest of the organization updated. Yeah, those were two big ones. And the dashboard was a huge effort from a number of people that I think really helped give people an understanding of what was going on and how significant the impacts were.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments on John's report?
Huge thanks.
So I'll just ask in a lighter side, John, are you going to do a best of 2020 vlog? Re-edit different parts of it?
So oh, great
add some
idea.
Deleted scenes, something like that?
I would absolutely do that. That would be much better than the blooper vlog. The blooper vlog that Julie and Kristen team keep threatening with, that'd be about a 4-hour vlog.
Okay, well, thank you. Great report. Next is item 7, commission business, 7A, commissioner reports. Are there any reports, commissioners?
I don't have any reports, but I do have a couple of comments.
Okay.
Would this be a good time?
Yeah.
Okay, I have 3 things out of a long, long list that I just want to express gratitude for. I try to start every day thinking about things that I'm grateful for. And so this will be focused on the PUD. But in addition, I have to say, I just like to focus on gratitude a lot. And so as we've just heard, huge thanks for our extraordinary employees, their continuing diligence, their hard work, and especially recently, the people that I've been working with most closely, Allison Morrison and Leela Wall. And also, I've really enjoyed getting to know some of our lead staff through personal one-to-one meetings. That's been such a blessing. Number two, our many opportunities, and I mean many, for learning more about many aspects of the world of energy through APPA, webinars, meetings, NWPPA, so many, PPC, all of those, and attending and participating in many of the utility organizations. And also the great reading resources that we receive. I just am so grateful for those and the dashboard. But, you know, every day I try to read ClimateWire, EnergyWire, E&E Daily. They're just loaded with really good information. And so I just have to say, I'm very thankful for those. And the final thing is our public. The increase in public interest and participation in the public utility, I think, is great. And I'm very grateful to every member of the public who takes time to learn about the PUD and respond. And And then I have four hopes for 2021. Number one, for all of us here in the PUD, the county, and way beyond, the reduction of COVID-related illnesses and deaths in and beyond our utility, good health for our PUD and the community. And hopefully, you know, by late summer, we'll be seeing really significant improvement in that. Number two, progress. I hope for progress on information about our options for maybe expanding to a 5-member board. Number three, I hope that we will work on our policies this year with the guidance of an experienced, competent consultant. And that would be toward with the goal of improving board communication with fellow commissioners and our public. And also tied to that is hopefully that we will have a chance to work with Sherelle Gordon this year. And my final, and it's a personal hope, that I get to go out more and visit some of the sites that I haven't yet seen, like Spada Lake. And, you know, I know Sid mentioned one time that he went up to measure the snow. I'd love to go on a, you know, a little excursion like that. But I know with COVID, you know, we'd have to be masked and we'd have to practice the CDC requirements and our governor's requirements. But those are my areas of gratitude and my hopes.
Right. Thank you, Commissioner. I will say an interesting aspect of the virus and doing everything remotely is there actually seems to be more opportunities for learnings.
Yes.
It's much more feasible to attend something when you don't have to fly or drive to it. So
Amen.
It's not always the quality, but it's certainly the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Next, we have item 7B, our commissioner event calendar. Any changes to the commissioner event calendar?
No changes. No, I think I'm added to a couple of those, but I will participate even though I'm not on the page.
Okay. Next. We have our governance is item 8, our governance planning calendar. Any changes to the planning calendar or concerns or comments?
I have none.
No, thank you.
Okay. I don't have any either. Well, you know, I do have one. Don't we annually reappoint amongst ourselves, Melissa, which, you know, like NWPPA, Energy Northwest, is that coming up?
Yes, I believe it's next meeting.
Okay. Good. Is there any further business to come before the board today?
So Commissioner Logan, this is a couple quick comments, and I sincerely apologize. One group that I left off, and I only have just a couple things I want to mention, was the water group. I blew it. I inadvertently
shame on you.
I know, and I feel horrible. Brant's gonna. I'm not getting a Christmas present, that's for sure. But two things. One was consistent with what we had talked about. Their new service requests were also up significantly. Well, I won't say significantly, but again, given the pandemic, even to be over what 2019, they connected about 100 more, actually 130 more. So 551 new services in 2020 compared to 422 in 2019. And then again, a huge accomplishment for the team. Brant and his team got the city of Granite Falls and city of Snohomish to finalize the new wholesale water agreements. Mm-hmm. Literally after years of discussion. Years, and Brant noted that he remembers having conversations over 15 years ago with the city of Snohomish on the potential term. So Again, that's a huge accomplishment for that team. And there's, again, his list is long you know, tremendous performance out of the water group as well. But, you know, be remiss if I didn't tee those up and mention those to you guys.
Yeah, I should have thought. Well, you know, we were a water utility before we were an electric utility.
Yep. That's another very, very, very strong team. Okay, I promise that's it.
Okay, I'll ask the question again. Is there any further business to come before the board today, commissioners and John?
No.
Okay. Hearing none, it is now 3:25 p.m. and our meeting is adjourned. Please stay healthy, everyone.